From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
We are in the thick of the season's home stretch, and we are coming out of the woods of Delaware, heading toward Michigan for the U.S. Women's Championship, and that's what we are going to be talking about this week on PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill, and I'm joined by Sarah Lamberson. Sarah, how should we talk about your weekend in Delaware? How was your weekend in Delaware? Like, on the whole, how was it?
It was interesting. I think we talked about this the past couple weeks, but I've been playing this course every time. I try to play at least once a year when I go home to see my family. That's all in about a 30-minute radius in Philly and Maryland and all over the place. But that did not work to my advantage, we'll just say. I don't feel like I posted this on social media, and I don't know if you want to get started about talking about this now, but I kind of have realized the difference between a weekend warrior pro and a touring full-time touring pro, and that like the entire week I spent seeing my grandparents, my parents, my sisters, brothers, nieces,
nephews,
doing life like
in
all
addition
that.
To disc golf. Yeah.
Right. Plus I was working because I work remotely. So I was working the whole time. And then Thursday I was just like, oh, I better go to the course and just like play a quick round. And then last minute, Matt Bell and I actually got asked by the PDGA to do the pre-NT putting clinic, which
Matt
was
Bell,
really cool. It was at a brewery. Oh my gosh. I'm so happy he killed it. That was super cool. But yeah, so my mind was just kind of elsewhere. And then I was asked to be on the feature card, which I have never had. I've never had the opportunity before. And I'm perfectly comfortable playing in front of cameras and galleries and all of that, because I've done that before, but not for an event of this caliber. And so I was like, yeah, definitely, I'd love to do that. And I guess I just didn't feel totally committed to a lot of my shots. And a lot of this course, if you get off, if you have a bad tee shot, you are left scrambling hard. And I think I felt a little bit rushed after a while, because the other women on the card, all three world champions, were throwing so like I would throw two shots in the same amount of distance that they were throwing one at times on the really long holes. And so I think after a while I just started feeling rushed, and this has nothing to do with anybody but myself and my mental game. Cause I was like, oh man, like I hit a tree and they're 300 feet ahead of me in the fairway. And I wasn't fully thinking through my scramble shots, which are arguably the most important shots on a course
like
this.
That,
on these par fours,
you're out of luck.
Yeah. Yeah. So I started off really strong. And then when we got into the thick woods, I kind of lost my mojo and did not have a good round. And I actually started the event in last place. And that was not, I have not been in that position in years.
Only
so that was very
one
strange
place
for
to
me.
Go, but up.
Exactly. And so my goal for the event was not to finish in last place. And I finished third to last. And the other thing was, this is not an excuse, but if you look at the field of women, there's 15 of us. And I think there were only three women that were below 900, which is
pretty strong for the women's field.
Yeah, like even if you looked at the world's field of 40, I don't have it pulled up right now, but if you were to look at the 49, yeah, if you looked at the 49 women, maybe half were, or a third were under 900, and so it was a very, very stacked field. So even if I had played three solid rounds, for me, I definitely wouldn't have passed.
Sarah,
still,
I think
but,
all this. You weren't in the ER the night before the final round, and
no.
No, I'm just giving you a hard time.
I know. But so none of this is excuses. It's just kind of me thinking back on my experience, and kind of the difference between being fully in to disc golf and partially in. As in, like, have a job where I've got to look at a computer for 40 hours a week instead of looking at a disc and a basket for 40 hours a week. And I think my consistency would be way better, and I'd be performing way better if I were able to go all in. but I'm not sure if that's ever going to happen because I like my stability. So anyway, it was really cool though, because my dad came out for the second round. I had two friends, from about 2 hours away in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, come down. I had a friend, who got me into disc golf. He came down and caddied for me the second day. And when I had cheerleaders like that, the second and third day, I just did so much better. So, I ended my event on a high note, started it pretty low and frustrated, but, you can see all 92 of my throws on YouTube, as well as, Paige Bjerkus, Sarah Hokum, and Katrina Allen throwing really awesome throws. It's all on YouTube on the Disc Golf Guy.
The Disc Golf Guy was there for all the women's coverage. Yeah. Thank you to him. Jomez was there for the MPO side, which, Sarah, I'm sorry that you had a little bit of a rough go, but I'm glad you got to see some family. Glad you got to be still out in the woods playing disc golf. So,
for sure. Yeah. Oh, and also Gatekeeper Media was out there. And I didn't see a whole lot of their footage, but they did some really cool. They had a two camera setup and they were doing a bunch of slow mo, like,
they'll be rewind. Their shot by shot stuff really is cool. Going to be coming out, I think, within the next week or two. They were never meant for next day coverage. Cool. But they're a newer team in the Northeast there, and we were happy to have them come out. So there'll be more coverage. They were on Chase Card. Yeah. And then I think even Tee Time was there for one round just to film it. So nice to get more coverage of an event that was fun to watch. I mean, I took in some of the Jomez stuff, and, you know, Marty was there doing Facebook Live, and this course just looked like a beast, unless your name was Ricky Wysocki or Paul McBeth or Sepapayu. And I guess we should talk about the results, because we talked about your result, but we didn't talk about anyone else's yet, Sarah. I'm sure people who are listening to the show probably know already, but Sarah Hokum took it down in the FPO division with a really, really impressive performance in the final round. She ended up besting the rest of the field by five, and she was only up by one going into the final over Paige Bjerkus. It looked like she was going to avoid kind of the world's hangover for the first round, and then it hit. And then, speaking of then it hit, Ricky Wysocki spent like the night before the final round in the ER with a stomach flu, and then still went out and tied the course record the next day. But Paul McBeth broke the course record, held off Ricky Wysocki to take a four-shot win. Like, that felt a lot closer to me than a four-shot margin when all was said and done, because they were just going back and forth all round.
So it was hole 17 where Ricky hit an early tree and was trying to scramble hard, and it was
up until the last couple holes, it was super close, and McBeth was just like couldn't miss from outside the circle, and neither could Ricky really.
Oh my gosh. Paul McBeth hit was crazy.
59% of his outside the circle, his circle two putts this week, which is insane. His other high this season was somewhere in the 40s, and I think that was back in the Memorial, but like that was way above his average. I don't know how sustainable it is, but it's certainly nice for him, for lightning in a bottle for this weekend, for him to take down the victory. His first NT win of the year. I could not believe that when I typed it. Just seems kind of silly. Yeah. Wysocki came in second. Eagle McMahon made a nice little bounce back up into third with the final round. He tied that previous course record at 13 under in the final round to kind of keep his hold on NT points. Paul Ulibarri also tied for third, and then Sepapayu was in fifth. He was up right there in the mix for the first two rounds and kind of fell off the last round. But I was pretty pumped about that because I had picked him to win, and I was feeling pretty good about myself the first two rounds. I was like, yes, my pick is going to work, and it almost did. But
Well, my pick worked, so.
Yeah, but your pick was like, my pick was a little more like bold, if you will.
Yeah, but my pick was like, he's going to come back, that McBeth's going to come back with a vengeance. No, I wouldn't say it's safe.
He came in second at Worlds.
All right, whatever.
Second at Worlds. Anyway, no.
Yeah, but his putting was off.
And that was, imagine if he putts this way at Worlds. Like, we're having a completely different conversation because he missed so many of those putts last round.
Yeah, no contest.
So nice to have Delaware on the national tour. Sarah, did you like, what was the vibe like on the ground there? Did it have, I mean, you know, what for someone who wasn't in Delaware, like, Was there a pretty good, did it seem like there was a good gallery?
Fair.
How was everything being run out there?
Yeah, the event itself was very smooth as far as I could see. The women teed off early every day, and because I was not playing well, I was the earliest tee time, except for the first day, of course, every day. It was very low key. Like,
Well, especially if you're at
I don't know
Worlds
if
the
it's
week
because
before,
I'm.
like it's probably a pretty big contrast.
Yeah. Well, that, and I'm used, it's one of those courses that it's not a home course of mine, but I've been there so many times and I'm like, you just roll up to the parking lot and start playing. So it didn't have a whole lot of excitement for me, maybe is the word. But the gallery I was so impressed with on Friday when I was on the feature card, I want to say 20 to 25
Which is
people were
awesome
following
for
us
Friday,
on a
yeah.
Friday morning at 9 a.m. Yeah. And they were so enthusiastic. Like they would clap for like 10-foot putts and shots that weren't even that amazing. But they were just so enthusiastic and so excited to be there and to have some of the best men and women in the world on their course, just seeing them tear it up. I left. I was thankful for the early rounds because I wanted to spend as much time with my family as possible. So I left right after my rounds. When I watched a bunch of the coverage, the gallery on the last day for the men
Yeah,
was
I heard they
absurd.
were getting not rowdy, but they were definitely into it.
Yeah, it was like herds of people. It might be also because the Eagles were playing. I think they started at 1 o'clock or something. So it was like right before the men teed off. And I'm sure there are some Eagles fans that were
Those are
also
not, I was
watching
gonna
the
say,
game
those
from their
aren't Eagles
phones.
fans. If they were out there, they would have been eagling. Maybe they were Eagle McMahon fans.
Well, exactly. Maybe that's possible. But yeah, there's just so many people just lying. And this is one of those courses that's kind of difficult
Spectators,
for
yeah.
spectators because it's just so wooded. There's not a whole lot of places for people to go, and so they're just kind of ducking into the woods. And the fairways were just lined with people, so that's really exciting. And I'm part of the Delaware Disc Golf Club Facebook page, and even today people were still posting about it. There's so many, I guess, semi-professional and just amateur photographers and videographers out there. There's so much media that came out
Yeah, I
that
mean, you
was
get that
just
first
really
time
cool.
NT enthusiasm, you know? So,
Yeah. So that part of it
great.
was
That's
very
awesome. I'm
exciting.
glad to hear it went well. It looked from afar, it looked great. It looks like a really challenging course. I mean, even you want to look and say, "Oh, Macbeth shot this course record and stuff like that." He did, but it was 1062 rated. We've seen a boatload of rounds above that this year. The hot round one, I mean, it was all coming in right around like 1050. There were 1030s, like those are good rounds, but they're nothing like we've seen like in the 1070s, 1080s at other courses. So I think it just shows you how difficult this course was. It was interesting talking to Macbeth. He's like, everyone says this course is really hard, but I don't think it is that much. And I was like, well, I guess that's the luxury you have when you're good. Here's my question for you, Sarah. More impressive performance, Paul Macbeth shooting 14 under par, course record, or Ricky Wysocki shooting 13 under par, previous course record, after spending the night bent over in the ER the whole time?
I feel like it's kind of hard to
Oh, come
compare
on.
because I don't know all I don't know all the
He
deep
was
the other
ill. He had to get
I
like
can
an
never
IV and
say
stuff.
like
He was
but
sick.
but how ill like I want to know more
He was
details
sick
about
enough to
his
go to the
illness.
hospital.
I know I'm not questioning that he was that sick, but I wonder how well he felt during the round because it was at 2 o'clock. I don't know if he was still feeling sick, then yes. Or maybe he just had a bunch of adrenaline, or he was like extra hydrated because he had an IV.
Well, I'm sure he had an
Maybe they
IV.
like gave him a little something something to.
I'm just saying, I've gone to the hospital for being sick before and gotten an IV and gotten that medicine, and I still was not going out to shoot a round of disc golf, let alone a course record setting one. First of all, I was like, man, is he even gonna play? And then next it's like, wow, he's playing, and then he starts playing, and I was just thinking to myself, he's gonna do one of these like crazy Michael Jordan games where it's like he's sick, but he just plays out of his mind because he just lets his body take over and turns off his mind. Does that mean Macbeth's 14 under was not impressive? No, but like the fact that Ricky Wysocki was in the ER until like 3:30 in the morning and then still played that well is pretty crazy.
Is
So,
crazy.
it was, I mean, Macbeth was like, I didn't even know he was sick because he doesn't he wasn't like following him on social media before the round.
Yeah.
He actually doesn't follow him. Ooh, this is your hot take. Paul McBeth doesn't follow Ricky Wysocki on Instagram.
I found out this weekend. That's interesting. I just thought he wasn't monitoring social media in general over the weekend, because that I wouldn't be surprised about.
I mean, he probably does that too, but he also told me that he doesn't follow Ricky.
Why? I wonder why.
I don't know, man. Gamesmanship.
Dun, dun, dun.
I know, right? I wonder
who should
if Ricky follows.
I not follow?
I wonder if Ricky follows Paul. Before we go too much deeper on the MPO side, because we've talked a decent amount. The biggest story, honestly, was the Ricky and Paul battle. It was one of their classics that they like to throw down, you know, at least once a year, where we get these crazy battles between the two of them. What did you see on the FPO side when you obviously, I mean, I know you were playing, but like, what other observations do you have about the division, maybe more toward the upper end?
Yeah. Well, obviously Paige Bjorkis killed it her first round. She shot two down, which was the hottest. Oh no, actually. Okay, so the best round of the event was Hokum's 68, the second round. But it's just crazy to me. So when we were adding up the scorecard afterward, like, I know I was shooting really bad, but I didn't realize it was that bad. And I didn't realize Paige had shot that well, because on this course, like I said, it's a lot about scrambling. So it's not like she wasn't hitting trees. She was hitting trees. And then she would just scramble so hard that she would still get her par.
That's funny. That was an observation that McBeth said too. He's like, you couldn't really tell when anyone was struggling or not.
Yeah.
It was really strange.
Just,
yeah. It was one of the perceptions of that course. It was like, because like, yeah, you would get off into the woods, but you could scramble. It wasn't like you were off your line and had no shot back. So like,
right.
You could miss your lines and successfully scramble, and so it was really difficult to tell if people maybe were playing as bad as they were or weren't.
Yeah, exactly. Like when I added up my scorecard and it was a 92, I was like, really? Did we add this right? I don't know. And then Paige shot a 69 and I was like, really? That, so I don't know. If you go back and watch the footage, like, her scrambling was just so good and her putting was really good. She made one, I think it was hole three. I can't remember now. No, it was a little bit later. It was like six or seven. She just threw straight down the hill. It was a really tough downhill, low ceiling, tight tunnel shot. And it didn't even look like she was going for it, but she just like canned a circle two jump putt.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that was pretty good. So I think the difference between the upper end of our division and where I was sitting, it was just the really successful scrambling and the putting.
Yeah.
And so Paige shot on average, what was it? Oh, I didn't add it up. But she shot well over her rating on average, although she did shoot a 923 the last round, and that's kind of what got her out of it.
Yeah, it seems like she kind of lost the putt the final round. She two putted four holes in a row to start the round, and on those holes, Hokum went par, birdie, birdie, par.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much it.
That's an amazing start.
Yeah.
So Hokum, on the other hand, shot a 970 average rating for the event. And she, just watching some of the lines that she throws, and granted, I'm not a forehand player, but like the way that she throws these lines in the woods is just incredible. Like I would never have considered to throw a forehand on some of these holes. And she's just throwing it like, I don't even know if it's got to be some sort of overstable disc that she's just like flexing. And then it like just does exactly what she wants it to do so precisely. It's just, it was amazing to watch. And then her putting was solid all three rounds too. So that was very impressive. And then Kristen Tatar,
Man, she's good.
She's really good. Her rating is going to be very boosted after Worlds and after this event, of course. She's 928 rated, and she's beating, you know, Paige, who's 939, Katrina Allen, 952,
right.
Elaine King. And I didn't get to watch any of her round. I think the disc golf guy's round two video just came out today, so I need to catch.
Yeah, his round two's been out. His round three, I think, was finally going. He was having some like internet troubles and travel and things like that.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. So I'm really interested just to see kind of what her play is. Did she was she really clean off the tee? Did she have really good scrambling?
Yeah, it looks
It's
like a mix
definitely.
of, it looks like a mix of both. I mean, and that kind of is what you expect here at this kind of course. But 100% circle one putting the final round. She only made about half her scrambles. But I mean, she led the tournament in birdie percentage.
Yep.
She just offset it with a couple of big numbers too. She had a seven the final round. So I think she just has a ton of potential, and it's nice to really see her over here battling it out. I won't be surprised to see her mix it up at US Women's this week either.
Yeah. And then the other, so Katrina Allen played with her, of course, on the feature card, the first round. And she said right before we were kind of joking around, we were putting, and she was like, "Don't make fun of me. I just changed my putting style yesterday."
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, "Oh God." And it looked good. It looked, she looked confident while we were, practicing before the round, but there was a couple
Did she
times.
struggle during the round? Yeah.
Yeah, the first round she struggled. She had a couple of air balls and just didn't. She just can't get back into the putting groove,
You know what
unfortunately.
though? Like, here's what I like about that. Like, I like that she recognized it was an issue and was
Yeah.
willing to, like, they're like, instead of just stubbornly like hitting her head against the wall the whole time and just sticking to the same putt and trying to get out of it and trying to get out of it, sometimes you gotta shake it up.
Yep.
So I give her kudos for that. I mean, right before the tournament, that's a tough thing to do. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, could you notice discernibly like what was different about it?
Yeah, she did kind of like a, it's hard to explain without showing you, but she would line it up and then she would bring it down and then she would putt. So it wasn't as fluid
Okay.
as she used to. But she was missing, she would either airball it right or miss low. So I don't know if it's like a weight transfer issue
I
or
have issues with that.
confidence or what it
I always
is.
miss to the left. I'm a left-handed putter, and I often like pull to the left when I miss, and it's
That's,
just, it can be a
yeah,
really
I do
hard
that
thing to
sometimes
fix.
too. Yeah. But she, her birdie percentage was good. She was fourth in birdie. She was fifth in scrambling, first in parked.
Look, she's a tremendous thrower of the disc. I think if she
Yeah.
figures out the putting issues that have kind of plagued her this year, she'll be fine. It's just a
Yeah,
matter of,
agreed.
you know, maybe that doesn't happen middle of the season. Maybe it's going to be an off-season thing where she just gets it all sorted out. I don't think we're seeing like the demise of Katrina Allen or anything. I think we're just seeing, you know, struggles. And a lot of it, and she's admitted it earlier in the year, she's gotten, when with putting with her, like she's gotten the yips. A lot of it's mental. So
Yeah, that's true.
I like seeing that she's mixing it up. I hope she can get it back on track because yeah,
Yeah.
she still knows what she's doing with the frisbee. Like
For
it's not
sure.
like
Yeah.
she's forgotten how to play.
One interesting thing that I saw, I just noticed in our field of 15, there wasn't a single tie.
Wow, that's
How's
pretty
that?
rare.
How's that for score separation? Yeah. And I mean, it wasn't even really close. Like, well, there's a couple scores that were close between Kristen and Paige. There's one stroke, then two strokes, and then it was like three strokes, four strokes, three. Okay. And then it's a little bit tighter in the middle, and then it just toward the end, the Sarah Lamberson girl, man, like
She tore it up.
yeah, tore it up. So yeah, that was kind of interesting too. There's just a lot of score separation because there are a lot of freaking trees.
Yeah. Real quick, let's shift back to the MPO side and wrap things up real quick. Your putting clinic partner, Matt Bell,
Yeah.
comes out, gets on the lead card first after the first round, really struggles, goes below like 1,000 rated second round. Third
Yeah.
round comes out on fire, goes 8 for 8 to start, hits from 50, hits from 70. Later in the round, hits from like 65, again from 50 and 60. Clearly, dude can putt a long way. But still, so ends up coming back up 10 places, tying for 7th. Really strong performance with him, but also a little bit, I mean, I don't want to say surprising, but like his rating's been climbing back up. I recall seeing earlier in the season that it was down like below 1,000. He's back up to 10-11 now. Yeah, this time last year he was at 998, so maybe not this season,
Okay, that's
but
good. Yeah. And that.
he's ticked back up to 10-11, and you know, Santa Cruz, he can play in some woods, and clearly can putt. We know he's a, what was it, 2015 world putting champion? And then
yes,
him and Lisa, known for their putting, just won world's mixed doubles. So
yep.
Yeah,
this
man.
Is his best finish by far on an NT. His best finish before this was, he finished 41st in Santa Cruz and 41st in Las Vegas.
That's just this season?
Yep, yep. And then he's got, I mean, he's full-time touring, so he's got tons of A, B, and C tiers. But, yeah, this was a great finish for him. I'm so proud of him. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot from him in the putting clinic. Like, there's, he really thinks a lot about the mechanics and the just practicing putting. And I have a lot of tips and things that I tell people, stuff that I've picked up over the years, but he just puts so much thought into all of the little logistics that go into putting. So I learned a lot from him. That
See,
really
that's
cool.
That like it was a clinic that you could teach people, but also learn something.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty neat. Yeah.
Yeah.
So nice to see him have a strong performance. And then a little more on Seppo Paju. Like, I really had a nice time talking to him over the weekend. You know, he was bummed with how his last round went. I think he said it was 10-14. It was right around 10-15. But he's like, you know what? I've been averaging 10-40, like, my last 15 rounds. So everything's okay. He's like, I know I can throw and do well.
Yeah.
I mean, Ricky called him a genius thrower, which I think is a really good way to describe it. I don't know if you've watched him throw a lot. We watched him that final round of Worlds a little bit. He just,
yeah.
I mean, it's just, he's really, really talented. And I like seeing that he's been over here and spending some time playing against the top players. And he said, this was the goal, like, when I came over here, was to get experience against, like, Ricky and Paul and start to feel more comfortable with these guys. And,
yeah.
And he is. So I think we're going to still see him mix it up. He's got the talent. If he can get the putt right, that's the biggest thing for him. And the funny part, the one tidbit I wanted to put in, he went the night before final round, you know, I talked to him and he was in second place and going to battle for the win. And, you know, I always like to ask, especially guys who haven't been on the lead card as much in the final round, so it might be newer for them, like what they're doing to kind of like chill out or calm their nerves or whatever.
Yeah.
Him and Vanessa Van Dyken went to see a horror film, The Nun.
Ooh, I like their style.
Apparently they're into the horror flicks. It's kind of a thing with them.
Interesting. Me too. I love that. But I've never thought of, I don't know. I'm like such an old person. I'm like, I have to go to bed at 9 o'clock, no matter what time I have to.
I was talking to him at like probably 9 their time. So it wasn't too late, but I thought that was a funny little tidbit that he likes the horror movies. I don't think
that's
it was
awesome.
Especially like, hey, I'm going to watch this horror movie to get my mind right for tomorrow. But
yeah,
it was part of that. So cool to see him up there doing it well. Let's do the hot round, Sarah, and then I think we can take a quick break. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to start with the women.
Yeah, why don't you start with the women's hot rounds? I'm sorry that you are not on them this week.
That's all right.
Okay.
I wasn't expecting to be. All right. So the hottest round was shot by Jessica Weiss. She played the Rochester Flying Disc Open, sponsored by Dynamic Discs, and it was in Hilton, New York, near Rochester.
I was going to say, and hopefully Rochester.
Yeah, yeah. And her third round, she shot a 997. So congratulations, Jessica. That is very, very hot. The second hottest round, and we talked about this a little bit last week, Paige Pierce was initially signed up in the MPO division for the Canadian Disc Golf Championships.
Yes,
and
then last minute she was over in FPO, like on UDisc and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever get the scoop on that?
No, I didn't. I mean, I know, like, I read an article on Ulti World that said her goal was going up there. She was trying to qualify for USDGC, but that would have been just by scores. It didn't matter because when she qualified for USDGC at the 2017 Aussie Open, she played in FPO. So it was purely by scores. So I'm wondering if it was either maybe like an early input error.
Maybe.
Or someone got confused or whatever. But ultimately, she was playing FPO. I would imagine it's a comfort level thing, you know, if you want to go out and shoot your best, play in the division that you're used to.
Yeah, true. So she played the Canadian Disc Golf Championships presented by Dynamic Discs in Prince Edward Island. It looked beautiful. I saw some photos.
Oh, yeah.
And her first round, she shot a 990, and she won that event. Congratulations. So did she qualify for USDGC?
She did not.
Ah, too bad.
She did not. Her final round score, I think, was too low.
Ah, dang.
But I believe if she wins U.S. Women's, in the past, they have awarded a USDGC Birth, I believe. I don't know if they're still doing that this year. I should probably confirm that, but that's how it's been the past couple years, if I recall correctly.
Okay, cool. The third hottest round was at the Delaware Disc Golf Challenge presented by Innova. Sarah Hokum, as we mentioned, her second round, she shot a 982 rated round and she finished first. Here's a good one. The Porcupine Ridge Open presented by Innova and Infinite Discs, $3,000 added cash.
In the title?
Yep. Yep. In parentheses, $3,000 added cash. That was a B tier in Augusta, Maine. And my girl, Nicole Pickle. Oh gosh, I'm not gonna be able to pronounce her. Dion, she's told me so many times how to pronounce her last name. We'll just go with Pickle.
Okay.
That's easier. Her second round, she shot in
Dionisio?
Dionisio. I think it's Dionisio. Dionisio.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Sorry, Pickle. She shot a 978 her second round, and she won that event. Congratulations. That's awesome. And the last highest rated round in our top five was at the Delaware Disc Golf Challenge, and Paige Bjerkus, her first round, shot a 977 to finish third.
Very nice.
Very cool. Yeah.
To circle back to Paige Pierce and clarify, the USDGC does have exemptions for those who didn't qualify. So invites that they extend to the U.S. Women's Championship, U.S. Women's Champion, U.S. Masters Champion, U.S. Amateur Champion, the DEF National Championship.
Awesome.
Which is super cool. And then the Women's World Champion and former U.S. Champions. So there
wow.
you go. So there is still one USDGC spot up for grabs this weekend at U.S. Women's.
And that's all in the regular flight, not the performance
yeah.
flight?
Yeah. No, this
awesome.
Is
awesome.
I don't think they do performance flight anymore.
They're not doing any. Okay.
No.
That's awesome.
So yeah, cool. So there is one up for grabs still. So whoever wins this weekend could still play if they want to. All right. On the men's side, actually almost all of these did not come from Delaware, which I think that proves Paul McBeth, if you're listening, that maybe this course was hard.
Yes.
Just saying.
It was very hard.
I just have to give Paul a hard time. at the 2018 Oregon Disc Golf Championship, Scott Withers, who I believe is the highest rated player in that state, so this one makes sense, took down the victory with a 1077 rated opening round for the hottest round of the weekend. All the way over on the other side of North America, Mr. Nate Sexton is now your United States champion and your Canadian disc golf champion after winning that event over on Prince Edward Island. He shot a 1068 rated second round. Pretty good. I don't think there's a Mexican championship that he can grab before USDGC.
I saw that. Somebody posted that on Facebook.
Yeah, so I think it was AJ Risley. So he can be the
North American.
But I mean, yeah. pretty dominant. He's dominating North America right now.
Yeah.
Nate Sexton.
Yeah.
So, and you know, nice to have that event going on in Canada. I'm really pumped that Central Coast Disc Golf was up there so people can see what looked to be a pretty stunning place.
Mm-hmm.
All the pictures I saw coming from that place were like jaw-dropping.
Yeah.
So third hottest rated round, Paul McBeth's final 14 under par at the Delaware Disc Golf Challenge was rated 1062 for his victory. A couple more hot rounds came from the Oregon Disc Golf Championships. Jesse Bickley and Sean Kirk both shot 1061 rated opening rounds. Bickley took second and Kirk came in fourth. And your final hot round of the weekend, Willie Prince. Hey, Willie Prince making an appearance from, we remember him from, gosh, it's not Idlewild. Why can't I think of the name of the course?
Ledgestone?
Right no, the Toboggan.
Oh, Toboggan. Toboggan.
Great
Sorry.
Lakes Open. Gosh.
That's right.
I could, it was just on the tip of my tongue the whole time. He came and he shot a 1060 rated round to take first place at the Grand Rapids Championship. So.
Yeah.
Also in Michigan, so congrats to him. Sarah, should we take a break?
Let's do it.
Let's take a break, and then we will come back, and we will talk U.S. Women's, and, you know, we'll pump the PDJ Radio Challenge, which has been going pretty well so far as well. So we'll be back here in just a moment on PDJ Radio. All right, before we get into the United States Women's Disc Golf Championship, I want to kind of circle back to one thing that Paul McBeth said earlier this weekend in regards to the Delaware Disc Golf Challenge, and it's kind of its close, you know, proximity on the schedule to Worlds. You know, part of it was he had a short memory, put away that final round of Worlds, was able to come out and shoot his hot round in the beginning and ultimately win. But something he said kind of stuck out to me, and I want to ask your take on this, Sarah. I know my take, and I will give you that in a minute, but I like to get you in the takes too. So he said, "It's not a really good thing, but my mindset's like whoever wins this week is going to be talked about more than our current world champion because it's so fast. It's just going to be overshadowed so fast because we have a big tournament this weekend. If it's me, Ricky, and Eagle at the top, it's going to be like, oh, Worlds was a fluke, and that's kind of not fair." I disagree. Like, I don't think from this event, like, I'm not, I mean, awesome. Paul McBeth, Rick Wysocki, great showdown. But three-round NT right after Worlds, to me, doesn't automatically mean, oh, we're not going to talk about Greg Barsby as world champion ever again.
Okay, you are going to be happy with me because I actually don't have a wishy-washy answer.
Yay!
I completely disagree.
With what?
With what he is saying.
With what Paul, okay, so you right. agree with what I was for saying, essentially.
Yes, for the following reasons. A, there was no live, like, okay, so there was no live coverage.
Right.
And so people weren't watching this live. They weren't on, it wasn't a nail biter. They weren't on the edges of their seat. Blah, 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 blah. B, although this was an awesome NT, it's not an established NT yet. So it doesn't have as much of pomp and circumstance around it.
It's not like putting the glass blown open right after Worlds.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's coming from a place of maybe like, you know, pump yourself up motivation a little bit. Like, hey, like I can get myself back into the conversation. And like he called it like it was him, Ricky,
well,
and
Eagle. Did.
But
he's definitely back in the conversation and he made a huge statement by shooting the course record. But
out of the conversation.
But you know who I'm looking at right now on the PGA website?
Probably Paige Bierkus.
Well, yes. Paige Bierkus.
But also
and her beautiful smiling face and Greg Barsby with like the most.
It's a little
happy, like I don't I
it's
have
happy
no
but it's a little bit like maniacal and mischievous. Like I don't remember if you noticed.
I don't
like,
know
at that point that was he was like pointing to the crowd being like, no, I'm gonna lay this thing up, I'm not gonna run this putt. So he was kind of like,
oh, like challenging.
He was feeling a little feisty there. No, they're great photos and
they're great
right,
photos.
I mean yeah.
Like, nobody's forgetting about Greg Barsby because that was such a great storyline.
But this is the first time we've talked about Greg Barsby the whole show. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, because we were because it is
I
not
know,
on
I'm
our
just kidding.
Podcast
I'm joking. He
episode outline to talk about Worlds. There,
hey, look. he shot well still. I mean, he came in 19th, you know, trickled down the leaderboard a little bit. But still, also, you got to remember, Greg Barsby got himself some extra face time being on the round one feature card. Because he was the world champion and the tournament director, Jimmy McIlvain, wanted him on the feature card. So, I mean,
yeah.
I don't think, no, I don't see any of this as being like, oh man, I think Worlds still outweighs this one now.
For sure.
Yeah. Good. See, good job right. having a strong take.
Thank you.
Let's talk about U.S. women's because this one is very important. It is a PDGA major. It
yes.
is going to crown the national women's champion. I'm super pumped to see how this one shakes out, especially with the way that the women's division has been this year. It's like there's a lot of intrigue in this one for me, Sarah.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Yeah. Although I've not played these courses. I'm not very familiar with them. I know you talked to Aaron Oakley about what the courses look like. So it's hard
yes.
for me to, I know we're going to make picks, but it's hard for me to make those picks before I hear about what the courses have in store for us.
Do you want to hear about the courses?
Let's hear about the courses,
right
yeah.
Now? Okay, so yes, I talked to Erin Oakley today, and she, by the way, she's not the tournament director because she's playing. She labels herself like the events manager, but she's doing
okay.
it on there. And she in the past, has run some really successful women's series and women's events in Michigan.
Yeah, she's
She
awesome.
Took off doing that this year so she could do U.S. Women's. So we appreciate that. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
So basically, there's two courses there. One is Renegade Trails and the other one's River's Edge. With Renegade, she said it kind of looks like a country club a little bit. It almost
okay.
looks more like a ball golf course. She said it's flat, but there's sporadic trees, and they even like the parks system, who she said none of the people on the parks, you know, maintenance people play disc golf, but they take a ton of pride in these courses.
Cool.
At the park. But the name of the proper park is called Birchfield Park. This is in Lansing, Michigan. We should probably preface it with that.
Yes.
So Renegade Trails should looks like a country club, so kind of golf coursey, but they even put in actual sand traps. They created sand traps for this course,
Oh,
which is
very
kind of an
cool.
interesting little take, given that it's not an actual ball golf course.
Yeah.
Apparently hole 18 has this really beautiful landscaping with like flower beds and a fountain on it, which is super cool.
Ooh.
And she said it's like the first basket you see when you pull in the park, so it just gives you a really good vibe and puts you in the mode.
Cool.
River's Edge is the other course. She said it starts out with some rolling hills, like an old toboggan hill. It's what they do in Michigan, right? And
Yeah.
so she said the first 8 holes are a little more open, have a little more woods in them, but not a ton. And then you get to the back 10, and she said it's solid woods, really technical.
Okay.
So she said both of them in the long positions are championship style courses. The park did allow her to design 14 short pins for like the age protected divisions and stuff, so they'll be changing around the baskets and stuff like that. But it sounds like the two courses themselves are fairly complementary, and it's kind of that style we're starting to see at a lot of these events where you get one more open, one more wooded, and you get to see the whole kind of skill set. So,
Yeah.
US Women's is this Friday through Sunday, and it's an interesting format. They for this they do shotgun starts every day. They do one round Friday, 2 rounds Saturday, 1 round Sunday. And I'm talking to Aaron and then also Sean Sinclair, who's the main events guy for this one from the PDGA. He said, one of the big things with this is that the reason for the shotgun starts is so you can get more women who come out, and maybe they're moms, like maybe they're stay-at-home moms, like Erin herself, stay-at-home mom, or maybe they're working professionals. They don't have as much time to come out, so tee times aren't the best for them. Like they maybe can't stay until 6 o'clock on Sunday because they have an 8-hour drive to make or something. So
Yeah.
there's some considerations in there made for the women to try and just make this an event geared toward them, which is really cool.
That's awesome.
It does take away from like some of the scoring stuff. We won't have UDisc live scoring, but we'll have our PDGA live scoring that people can follow along with. And then we're gonna have Jomez there covering all 4 rounds. And then Terry Miller, the disc golf guy, is gonna be on the ground as well. So there'll be media coverage, there'll be live scoring, PDGA will be there. Should be great. I'm super pumped to see what goes on. I just talked about all of it, Sarah. What do you know about it? Because
Well, so I
I just
looked
took over
at
that stretch and I'm sorry.
it's okay. So I looked at the caddy book, and so the FPO division specifically, they're playing both long and short of each course. So every round that they play will be in a different layout. So River's Edge in the long
Oh, that's pretty
layout.
cool.
Yeah. So River's Edge in the long layout is a par 70, which I was like, geez, that's pretty hefty.
That's
And it's
borderline Iron Hill right there.
Yes. And it's about 7,500 feet. The short layout of that course is a par 54, so quite a difference there. And just over 5,800 feet.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. Renegade's Trail is a par 66 in the long layout with 7,600 feet and a par
Okay.
64, so not too much different in the short layout with about 6,200 feet. So I think it'll be kind of cool with the different layouts each round. I wonder how some of the other pros feel that way, feel about that, because I know we've talked about before, it's nice,
Getting there and practicing and
yeah, just like
yeah.
one or two courses instead of, I mean, this is almost
It
like
essentially
practicing
becomes
four
four
courses.
courses. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
I wonder how significant. I mean, it sounds pretty significant, the changes on to the short pins, but I guess short pins generally, hopefully that's better and not as demanding.
Yeah.
So
And then the feature card is pretty exciting. We've got Liz Sipien, who is from Michigan herself, which is going to be really cool. She just had her second child several months ago, and is getting back into the swing of things. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how she does. Paige Pierce will be on the feature card. Kristen
defending
Tatar.
champion.
Yes. Kristen Tatar, which I'm also very excited because like I've said, I have not gotten to play with her yet since she's been over here in the States, and I'm really looking forward to seeing some of her style.
Yeah.
And then Young Gun, Haley King.
Dude,
How
she
old
can
did we?
throw.
I
I
know. I
watched
got to
her for a
see.
couple holes at Worlds when I was
Yeah,
kind
me
of carting
too.
around the courses, and she can put them out there.
Yeah. So I think it's cool. We're not seeing some of the usual, the Hokum and the Bjorkas and the women that we've been seeing a lot on coverage.
I will take a small portion of credit for that. That was
all right. All right.
That was that was kind of the idea. It was like we wanted to make a feature card for this one because it is U.S. Women's, and we were going to have Jomez coverage there, but we also wanted to maybe change it up a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, get some different names and faces who people don't necessarily know as much but should know.
Yes.
Should know and who we want them to know. And that's really the cool part about this event. Like we're trying to put the same type of face on this thing as any other big major and give the women the kind of event they deserve. And it sounds like Erin and her staff are really doing the same thing.
Yeah.
She said the vibe of women's tournament is so much different. I mean, even just little things like taking into consideration where the bathrooms are. Like she's gotten cheers in players meetings just because of bathrooms. So it's like it's really cool to see more women's events like this, and I love that we have a major devoted to the women because they certainly deserve it. And it's nice to have a woman helping so significantly to run it. That's not obviously to take anything away from the tournament directors themselves, but I know Erin is doing a lot, and I think having her stamp on it is huge because she can bring that perspective of, you know, running women's events and being a woman herself and doing some of those things where you focus on not just the competition, but the overall vibe and the camaraderie there. She said the camaraderie at these events is great. So
yeah, I've played in,
it sounds pretty fun.
I think I've played in two U.S. women's and it's hard to describe, but it is a lot different. Last year in Johnson City, it's just, even just the opening ceremony dinner was just really cool. I mean, it's hard to explain.
Hey, look, I get it. Dudes can be kind of a pain.
You said it.
I did say it. I was the first one to say it. I will make no bones about it. So, I hope the event this weekend goes well, and I'm also looking forward to seeing the coverage. I won't be out at this one, but I'm looking forward to it. These courses sound really interesting to me too.
Yeah.
So I think more people and more courses on screen is a good thing.
Yeah. I'm pretty jealous that I won't be there. I could not play Worlds, the NT.
Sorry, it really just sounds like you need to go RV life. It's all.
I know. But the other impressive thing is there are 46 open women registered for this event.
165 women total, like across all the divisions. It's amazing. It's great.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say is there were 49 women signed up for Worlds. So the fact that there's close to that many for this event is awesome.
Here's the thing you can take from that. Like, I'm just looking at the Pro Masters Women 40 division. Elaine King, Courtney McCoy were both in the Open Women's division at Worlds. So that bumps it up to 48 right there, which is just around the same.
Oh, and we've got Pam Reinecke and Sandy Gast. They played 50, they're playing 50 plus and 60 plus, but they were in the Open Women's division at Worlds too.
So there you go. It's great. I mean, 22 in the Advanced Women's division, all the way down to 15 in intermediate women, 20 rec women. Like that's awesome. Junior girls, there's five juniors playing. These are the kind of events that really help grow the women's side, and I'm happy to see it happen this weekend. And I'm happy to see the major tag put on it because then it gets the, you know, more recognition and media and things like that.
Yep, definitely.
So who should we pick?
What division? I don't know. I was trying to remember. I picked Bjerkus and Macbeth to win last week.
Which means you probably picked first.
Do you think so? Because you thought that Bjerkus was going to have the world's hangover.
That's true.
And you really wanted Seppo to win. So
I did. Let me think here. I don't know. It doesn't matter to me.
Flip who picked first at Worlds? Who picked first at Worlds? I think you did. Okay.
So, yeah, I picked first last week. So you're picking this week. Fine, take it.
Are we just doing open women? Can we do one?
Yeah. I think that's
okay. All right, fine.
Let's do one and a top five.
All right, fine. Okay. Oh, man.
Oh, so you weren't even ready for this. I can make my pick already. Come on.
I know. I'm going to go Hokum.
I like it. Going with the hot hand.
Yeah. She's just like so mentally stable on the course, and I know she's an amazing disc golfer, but I haven't played with her on a card in a long time, and just playing with her at Delaware this past weekend just reminded me of how darn good that she is. So Sarah's all the way. Who are you
like
picking?
I like it. I'm going to go with, I got to go with Paige Pierce. Like, she bounced back in Canada and won that. She's wanting the USDGC berth. So I'm going to take Paige Pierce.
Okay. I don't hate it.
You're so convinced.
Yeah. She's just too unstable for me right now.
I agree. It's a definitely hit or miss.
It's scary.
But I think she gets hot and she goes, she'll run away with it.
Yeah.
She's going to get it right.
All right. Top five. I'm going to go with Jessica Weiss. She's been shooting very solidly this year.
I took my top five pick.
And she was on the hot rounds this past weekend. I think she's feeling it.
Okay. I'm going to go similar to you. I'm going to go hot hand. She got me in top five this week with a top two performance. I'm going to take Kristen Tatar again.
Nice. I was considering it. She is. I was considering it. But this field is so stacked.
Just saying, Kristen Tatar is good.
I know. She is really good. She is really good.
Yeah. So
cool.
Keep an eye out for more coverage from U.S. Women's. Our social media channels will be all over that. We'll have written articles at PDGA.com, video on Jomez and the Disc Golf Guy, and live scoring through PDGALive.com. So that should be fun. Sarah, one last thing before we go. You want to give me the update on the PDGA Radio Challenge this month, don't you?
Yes, I do. So I believe it was last week, we presented the new challenge for this month, and it was taking a picture or uploading a picture that you have previously taken of your disc in a weird place. And
I was going to be really facetious and like take a picture of it in the basket. Does that count?
For you, that would be a weird place.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. Like, oh my gosh, I actually made one in the basket for once.
Yeah.
On,
oh,
like,
come on.
Row.
We still haven't played together.
Oh, I could have maybe hung with you this last weekend.
Oh my gosh. Okay. And a lot of people could have. My dad could have, and he can't. Anyway. What were we talking about? Okay. So, yeah. So there's a lot of people who have already uploaded their pictures. Sorry, my new dog is barking. He doesn't know.
Dog's very excited about the PDGA Radio Challenge.
Yeah. Well, we just got a new dog, and he doesn't know that we record at this time.
We'll forgive him. We're near the end of the show.
Yeah. So, upload your pictures. There's some really, really unique ones. So even if you don't have a unique picture yet, you should go on to Instagram, and the hashtag is PDGA Radio Challenge, and check out some of the pictures that people uploaded. They're pretty silly. So
awesome. That's what we want. The sillier, the better.
Yes.
The more fun and exciting, the better. And thank you for participating. It's fun to kind of engage with the listeners. And speaking of engaging with the listeners, we would love to hear from you more. Hit us up at radio@pdga.com. We are always looking for feedback. If you listen to the show, tune in and out, think there's ways we could change or improve, or new segments that you'd want to hear us do, let us know. Like, we are not, I think me and Sarah are pretty low key here, and we would like to hear from you if you think there's anything we can do better. Right, Sarah?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, cool. So until then, that was Sarah Lamerson. I'm Steve Hill. This has been PDGA Radio. Keep an eye out for U.S. Women's coverage this week. And Sarah, I will talk to you at the beginning of next week.
Sounds good. Have a great weekend.
You too. Everybody else, have a great week. And we will talk to you next time here on PDGA.